Okay, we're going to take a real big leap tonight to what is, for many people, their most favorite Jewish day, Yom Kippur.
What?
It's going to be Purim tonight. It's going to be Purim tonight, ladies. And the question you should be asking is, whoa. One second, Rabbi, just last week, we were standing at Mount Sinai getting the whole Torah. Now you are propelling us 900 years into the future, into Persia. I didn't say Great Neck, I said Persia. To discuss, those who didn't get that, please ask the people who are laughing afterwards why that was funny. Why it would be, I'm Persian, I can make those jokes. Why would it be that we're making such a big jump and just choosing this seemingly random holiday to discuss? The answer is going to have to be that this Purim story is not just a good excuse to get dressed up, get drunk, eat a lot of food, and pass out. It's that as well. But something very, very big and very, very important happened to the Jewish people at that time. And as we all know from my previous classes, happens every year at that time as well. Now, there have been a lot of miracles and a lot of great things that have happened to the Jewish people for many, many centuries, if not millennia. Yet this one, and another one, which we're going to bring up slightly tonight, that's Hanukkah, but this one in particular stands out in awe. Now that is something we need to celebrate. So let's have a look at, first of all, our little front. There's a lot tonight, by the way, I need you to focus. Although it's a fun holiday, there's a lot of background and a lot of depth to this holiday. By the time you leave, I hope to change a lot of misconceptions about this holiday. So first of all, we know the Jewish people entered the land of Israel 40 years after receiving the Torah in the year 2488, the reign of King David begins. His son, King Solomon, builds the first Beit HaMikdash, the first temple. That temple was destroyed in the year 3338, that's 423 BCE, on the 9th of Av. Okay, now we get into the Purim story. The Purim story happens in between the destruction of the first temple and the building of the second temple. Okay? That's where we are historically. There is a 70-year gap between the destruction of the first temple and the building of the second temple. The big question is, which is really discussed in a lot of detail, is when exactly do we start the first of those 70 years? And obviously connected to that would be, when is the final part of those 70 years going to happen? Meaning, there was a prophecy by the prophet Jeremiah. And he told the Jewish people, guys, we're going to get kicked out. He was a prophet. He knew this stuff. We're going to get kicked out of Israel. Temple's going to be destroyed. Don't worry. It's going to be a 70-year absence. Okay? Comes along an evil king called Nebuchadnezzar. He rules the Babylonians. They come in. They destroy Solomon's temple. And the Jewish people are dispersed. A major chunk of them go into Persia. Right? That's modern-day Iran. Okay. By the way, you should know that to this day, the kever, the grave of the hero and heroine of the story, who we're going to see who they are in a few moments, Mordechai and Esther, still exist in the city of today's city called Hamadan. Okay? Hamadan. And I have family members and friends who've actually visited. There's a custom for people to go to this city, and there's a big shrine with the grave of Mordechai and Esther next to each other. Okay? So that's where we are. Now, I need to run through the entire story. It's a great story. But just to give you a vision of what's going on, I'm going to do bullet points. I really advise you to get hold of Megillat Esther, the book of Esther and read through it in English. It'll take you 30 minutes. It's a great read. That'll be a good follow-up to today's class. So once again, the Jewish people have been kicked, the temple's destroyed, Jewish people kicked out. A major chunk of them go into the Persia. The Persian Empire was run by someone called Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, he was a very low commander in the army. He works his way up and becomes leader of the Persian Empire. He overtakes the Babylonian Empire. In the third year of his reign, the Megillah begins. Now, the Megillah is the story of all the events that happened during those years, those 9 years of the whole Purim story. Okay? And they open up with a really big party. That's the beginning of the Megillah. A really big party. How big is this party? It lasts for 6 months. 6 month party. And you thought you had a good time at college. Okay, 180 days. That's how long the party goes on for. Why was there a party? Now, this party, the reason for the party is not revealed, but there are hints in the Megillah. And the hints are like this. Ahasuerus comes out and he's wearing the costume of the high priest. The actual clothing the high priest would wear. He was wearing it. And they would bring out all the utensils at the party were the utensils that were used in the first temple. And the Jews were invited. And the Jews went to this party. And there was kosher food for them. And there was kosher wine for them. Why do you think this king, Ahasuerus, is throwing this big party? And why would he come out wearing the clothing of the high priest and serve all his food using vessels from the temple? What's going on over here? What do you think? Anybody? He's making a political statement. You Jews are not going back. The end of the 70 years has occurred. He was wrong. He miscalculated. And you Jews are staying here. You don't need a temple. You don't need Judaism. Come to my party and let's have a great time. The food's kosher. The wine is kosher. And it was actually, so the commentators, a political move to win the favor of the Jewish people, to make them lose hope of ever going back to Israel to build a second temple. And he throws a big party. The Jewish people of the time were criticized for doing this. There was one great Jew of the time who did not go, and he was a Jewish leader of the time. He was a member of the great Jewish assembly, as in he was the spiritual leader of the time. And his name was Mordechai. He refused to go to the party. He refused to go. And you can imagine the Jewish people at the time were like, why are you getting this angry king even angrier? Just go to the party. It's kosher food. It's kosher wine. Just go show your face, shake a few hands, and go home. But he refused to go and to give him that credence. Now, this party is what takes on the story. And the story gets a little bit racy. You see, Ahasuerus is married to a princess. Her name is Vashti. Her name is Vashti. She was a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, that king, right, who destroyed the first temple. Ahasuerus comes along, says, I have no royal blood. I need to get some royal blood going. He marries this Vashti. And there's a dialogue between them because she throws her own party. And when she speaks to Ahasuerus, she calls herself Hamalka Vashti, Queen Vashti. And when he speaks to her, he says, Havashti Hamalka. So she's saying, I'm Queen Vashti. He's like, you're Vashti. Who's the queen? That's like, you don't say Elizabeth the queen, you say Queen Elizabeth, right? So there's this battle even between them. He tells her, here it gets racy, to come out, excuse me for saying this, but this is what the story tells us, to come out in her crown. And she refuses to go to the party. So the commentators, she refused because when he wanted her to come in her crown, he wanted her to come in only her crown and nothing else. She refuses to come and be degraded in this way. And he gets into a drunken stupor and he kills her. He sobers up and like any good man, he regrets what he did while he was drunk. And he now has to find himself a new queen. Now, when I was a kid, we used to hear the story in high school. My rabbi would say, he would line up women and say, oh, she's Her toe's too big, her toe's too small. Now I'm an adult, I read the real version, I was like, whoa. He pretty much sets a harem up and kidnaps women off the streets, and women actually try to gamble and give themselves up to have the chance of being the queen. It's like a lottery. That word we'll visit again a bit later. Comes along Ahasuerus, and he decides which one of these many, many women he shall be with to become his queen. There was one woman who was put forward by her uncle Mordechai, who was an orphan. Realizing that her life was in danger, he was a great prophet and realized that she had a mission. She had a mission to save the Jewish people, and said she was not allowed to reveal her identity. And her name was Hadassah. You see, the Megillah tells us her name was Hadassah. Esther is another name. What does the word Esther mean? Anyone know? Anyone here called Esther, by the way? Have any Esthers here? It's a beautiful name. No? Really? Oh, okay. Esther means hidden. It's going to be a very, very important word. Esther means hastir, to hide. Okay, the basic idea is she is hidden. No one knows exactly who she is, and she's not allowed to reveal it. How old is she when she is selected as being the most beautiful woman? Different opinions. Some say 20, some say 40. I think I've heard someone said 60 years old. And she is a beautiful Jewish woman. More and more beautiful as the years go by, as I tell my wife very, very often. Okay? So the years go by, and she is now selected. She is forced, if you will, to marry Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus has someone in the kingdom who's extremely wealthy, the wealthiest person in the city, and his name is Haman. Okay, now Haman is a real anti-Semite. Okay? A real anti-Semite. But the point is, so is Ahasuerus. Now, there are two types of anti-Semite that exist in the world, say the commentators. Two forms. They either come like Haman, or they come like Ahasuerus. Okay, now, I'm from England, and the way I try to understand it, hope you appreciate this, is like your French anti-Semite and your English anti-Semite. You see, your French anti-Semite is like Haman. They'll be very upfront, and they'll say, I hate you, and I want to kill you. They don't hide it. They don't hide it. They tell you straight up. That's Haman. Haman hated the Jews. There's another type of anti-Semite who is actually worse. And by the way, according to our commentators, Ahasuerus was more dangerous to the Jews than Haman. Why? Because Ahasuerus was all, oh, no, we need you Jews. But behind their back, he was putting a knife in. That's Ahasuerus, like a British anti-Semite. Oh, yes. Oh, we love you Jews. And then if he's a real anti-Semite, he'll pass you over a promotion because you're a Jew. He'll do something else. Not, obviously, not all English people are like this, but the ones that are. Okay? Haman is the former. Ahasuerus is the latter. And Ahasuerus, obviously, is considered to be the worst one. Comes along Ahasuerus and says, Haman, and says, okay, there is a nation among us who are scattered, who don't marry our wives and husbands. They don't drink our wine. They don't eat like us. They're scattered. Let's get rid of them. Ahasuerus has no problem. Ahasuerus gives Haman his ring. Now, when you see a ring in those days, it was a seal. When you had the ring, you pretty much could do whatever you wanted. Okay? That's Haman. So Haman takes on, now he's extremely wealthy and a very, very powerful person. The entire Jewish people of the entire world are now freaking out. This great vocal anti-Semite, the Hitler, literally the Hitler of his day, takes on tremendous power. Now we see Esther starts to realize what she has to do. She's a little nervous to do it. And Mordechai says to her, one of the most famous lines in the whole Megillah, don't think the matter is dependent upon you. It could be that everything that happened leads to this one moment, that you have to go and save the Jewish people. So she gets involved not knowing what her mission is, but ultimately she sees that the entire future of the Jewish people is in her hands right now, through a whole series of unusual events. Haman makes a lottery. How do you say lottery in Hebrew? A pour. Hence the term Purim, because it's a lottery to decide which day to kill the Jewish people. It ends up being the 7th of Adar, which he thought was a great day, because that was the day that Moses died on. he didn't know that that was also the day that Moses was born on. Okay? So now, he chooses that day through the lottery. We'll see why this idea of lottery comes up again. Esther goes into Achashverosh and says, please spare the people. Eventually, he agrees, and Haman ends up getting killed, and the Jewish people are saved. That is, in a nutshell, what the whole Purim story is all about. And when you read it, like anyone does read it, you think, okay, nice story, Jews are saved. But if you think that's what Purim is about, you're missing the whole point. Let's begin at the beginning. If you look in the Megillah, it's the only book in all of Jewish scriptures where God's name is not even mentioned once. Why is that? Why is that? You see, there's two types of miracles that happen for Jewish people. And if you look in Jewish history is full of wonderful miracles that have happened to us. Rich of miracles that have happened for us. Splitting of seas, plagues. Those are called open miracles, or in Hebrew, nes galoi, a revealed miracle. Nes galoi, bless you.
What are these?
Nes is a miracle. Galoi means revealed, open miracle.
Example
of that would be the splitting of the sea, the 10 plagues that hit Egypt. The Hanukkah story, which we may talk about another time, is an open miracle because the lights lasted for 8 days and there was only enough oil to last for one day. That's a whole different discussion. But that's an open miracle. Then we have miracles which are around us. Oh, by the way, Hanukkah, you should know, was the last open miracle that existed, which is why Hanukkah is so important. At that point, hear me well, in Jewish history, the spiritual wall was broken down, and there were no more open miracles. There was no more Nes Galoi, no more Nes Nigla, no more open miracles. Okay? Why is another discussion, but at that time it broke down, and that was it. That's why Hanukkah is so important. We take the flame of that miracle and use it right through Hanukkah's, right through history. Purim is the exact opposite. Purim is all about hidden miracles. You don't see God's name, even once. It's extraordinary. You read the story, and you think you're reading the story of a novel, a Shakespeare play. That's what you think you're looking at. But you're looking at something much, much greater than that. What is the toy we play with on Hanukkah? The dreidel. On Purim? The graga, right? The graga, the noisemaker. What's the difference? This is this amazing idea. The dreidel is spun from on top. Yeah? So the events turn and the hand is revealed and on top. On Purim, the hand is turning the events but underneath. The events are turning and turning. There's a lot of significance to these, even the toys we use in Judaism. But the events are being turned. You can't see God's hand. If you look at the story of Purim, it's like coincidence after coincidence after coincidence. Oh, she happens to get the position. He happens to choose her. Mordechai happens to overhear a plot to kill the king. He happens to tell Esther, who tells Achashverosh, who kills these two people. And it happens to be later on a guy called Haman, the worst enemy. And it all builds up. And you're like, this is too much. God's running the show. But there's an aspect of Jewish life where God runs the show underneath. You don't get to see it. You have to pierce the curtain in order to see what's going on behind the mask. You understand what's happening behind the mask. Okay, let's look at the first page. Let me share something quite incredible with you. And this is going to answer up why this particular story, is the topic we chose to follow the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Now remember, there's 900 years between the giving of the Torah, the first ever Shavuot, and this story over here. So what's the connection? Many miracles happen to the Jewish people between. The two are connected. Let me tell you why. You see, once this event happened, and the Jewish people celebrated to such an incredible degree. We'll see how much they celebrate in a few moments. What happened was, there was another giving of the Torah, or I should say, another receiving of the Torah. Okay, now watch carefully. Look at the source, it comes from the Talmud. It says, Amar Rava, Rava, one of the commentators says, Afal Pikein Hadur Kibluk Bibeach Hashverosh. Even though the Jewish people accepted the Torah at Mount Sinai, something happened during these 9 years that the Jewish people re-accepted the Torah. They re-accepted the Torah at a much higher level than that first acceptance. Okay? And this is hinted at in the book of Esther, which was written by Mordechai and Esther, who were great prophets. The Jews established and accepted, what is that word? Kimu v'kiblu, they established and accepted these days. They established in the days of Achashverosh that which they had already accepted in the days of Moshe. So if you read the English, it's like, okay, they established and accepted this day called Purim. But the deeper sources say, no! They accepted and established what they had already accepted and established 900 years before. What was that? The giving of the Torah. What's going on? I don't get it. We got the Torah. We had a whole temple. We had so many amazing things that happened to the Jewish people between then and the whole Purim story. What was going on? What exactly did they accept, and how did they accept it? It goes like this. There are two ways that Jewish people relate to God. There's two ways that we as Jewish people relate to God. Way number one is called Yira, through fear, or it's probably a better way, A-W-E. That's one way. We want to do the right thing because we're scared. We know we should be doing it, and we feel guilty, and we know if we don't do it the right way, it's like a relationship to our parents, right? Your parents tell you to do something. There's an awe aspect. I'm nervous. If I don't do it, I get a patch, or I get told off, or I get kicked out of the house, or they cut my allowance, or I don't get an iPod. There's a fear relationship we have with our parents, and so too with God as well. That was established at Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was a very awesome event. It was terrifying. If you read the Torah, there was thunder, there was lightning. Cecil B. DeMille couldn't hold a candle to what happened at Mount Sinai. It was real fear. It was exciting. It was awesome. Just like right now, if the president walked in to that door, would you be scared? You wouldn't be scared, but you'd be in fear. Your heart would go, the adrenaline would get pumping. Are you scared? No. But you're like, whoa, this is like something. If he said, right, go downstairs, cup of water, give me a meal. You're like, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. You listen, but there is a fear aspect to what you're doing. Are you following? It's a very simple, this is Judaism 101. That's one way that we relate to God, to our families, other people, but to God. There is a much better way and higher way that we connect to God. And the clue is in the first line of the Shema. Does anyone know the first line of the Shema? The hint to this? It says, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. And the first word after that is, Va'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. You should love the Lord your God. Like, whoa, 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 1 second. I mean love. I should be in awe of God. I should fear God. Doesn't say that. The first word is, you should love the God. Says the great commentator Rashi, love is much better than fear. You see, fear doesn't last such a long time. Because as soon as the fear aspect has gone away, so too your relationship goes away. If someone puts a gun to your head and says, eat healthily, you will eat healthily. But as soon as that gun is removed, you're back on burgers and fries. If your relationship to God, or to anything really, is based upon fear and fear alone, it will work. But it's a temporary solution to all your problems. unlike love. Says Rashi, love is a much better way. If you love God, if you love being Jewish, by the way, this is where the Jewish people have failed. You see, many, many people of our parents' generation, which you may actually appreciate, their relationship to Judaism, God, I hear this so many times from J.C. Peep's parents, they always say this to me, oh, if I would have learned this from my rabbi, I'd be... You hear people say this to you ever? I wish that I would have had Judaism or Israel that experience. Because their experience was fear. Right? The Jewish people, Jewish rabbis or the leadership failed because a lot of the education in our parents when they were children was fear-based. It was for my mother. Right? It was very strong and you got to do this and it was fear-based. Now that does work, but as soon as you're out of high school, it's like, hey, okay, that was good and off we go. Not the way to do it. It's got to be love-based. If you love it, get people to love it and enjoy it, you'll see them again. It won't just be one Yom Kippur a year. You may catch them for a Shabbos during the year. You may catch them for a Jewish wedding sometime. Who knows? Are we clear on this? Mount Sinai was fear. Now, you need a little bit of fear to get things going. When you're standing under the chuppah, about to get married, you're not standing there saying, oh, I'm in love. You're like, oh my God, what the heck am I doing? And that's okay. It's okay to be absolutely frightened out of your skin at your wedding. Because if you're not, he will be. Love will come. Love will come. But he's not standing there, oh, I just, you're like, oh, it's fear. Fear is a good motivator. Makes me behave myself. Makes me speak well. Makes me treat people with respect. That's okay. But it doesn't last. If it doesn't turn into love, eventually, the game's over. Okay? Now, here is another little twist in the whole story, and there's going to be a few more. So hold your horses. Mount Sinai is widely accepted as representing the year aspect. What was given at Mount Sinai? The written Torah to the Jewish people. Along with the written Torah was an oral Torah, right? Which we've spoken about before, which gives you the details. If the written Torah are the headlines of the news article, the oral Torah is the article itself. For example, the Torah tells you to keep Shabbos. It doesn't tell you how to keep Shabbat. It tells you why to keep Shabbat. It doesn't tell you how to do it. You've got no idea. Nothing. Zip. You get no idea. Comes on the oral Torah and says, oh, by the way, this is how you do it. Okay? So that always went with the Jewish people for centuries and centuries. And it's tough. You see, when you read the Torah and English, it's nice. There's some stories. There's some laws. Keep the Sabbath. How? Who cares? Take the weekend off. Who needs a Shabbat off? You can have a Shabbaton. It's all good. It's all good. Comes on the oral Torah and says, yeah, there's a bit more to it than that. When did that kick in? That whole oral Torah came from Mount Sinai, but it wasn't until, now check this out, the Purim story that the Jewish people fell in love and really accepted this Torah with love. For all those years, there was a fear aspect, and that seemed to turn around and twist at this time. Why? Because the amount of love, an outpouring of love, that we are going to recreate every Purim by the four mitzvahs that we do, okay? That amount of love generated a real desire to do it. I don't know. I'll think of an analogy. Let's use the chuppah. Because the Jewish people did marry God, whatever that means, at Mount Sinai. But, as we all know, a wedding ain't a marriage. And a marriage ain't a wedding. You got to fall in love. You got to do your job. So how do you fall in love? We've discussed this before. How do you fall in love? The answer to that question is in the word love. Okay? What is the word love in Hebrew? You should all know this at this point. Is ahava. Those who are my bar mitzvah course know this. Hebrew word for love is ahava. The root of that word is hav, to give. If you've never heard this before, write it down. The root of the word ahava is hav, to give, which means, listen very carefully, this could change your marriage. If you give somebody something, you fall in love with them. I'll say it again. The formula is very, very simple. If you give somebody something, you will love them. It's not like the Western world teaches us that if you give somebody something, they'll love you. If I love my wife, and it's Valentine's Day, and I buy her 1 carat diamond earrings, she'll love me? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe she wanted 1.5 carat diamond earrings. Or in her case, 2 carat diamond earrings. Right? But if I give her a gift, I will love her. This is basic Judaism. Come to my talk on love, dating, and marriage. You know more about this. But if you want to love somebody or have someone love you, they have to give to you. As a side point, I will mention in code, what's the most precious thing that you own? Yourself. If you give yourself to somebody else and they just take, whether you like it or not, you will fall in love with that person. To some degree. Maybe not totally, but to some degree. That's just the way the system was created. That's the way God made the world. I always tell people on the JC trips, those who are on the JC trip with me, that the people who get the most out of the trip are the people who give to the trip. People are always complaining that people are taking. People have the best time at college, the people who give to college. People have the best time at the JC, people who give. People have the best relationship with their families, people who give to their families. Because if you give, if you're a giver, 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 the right time, the right place, the right way, and the right how. But if you give the right way in a healthy fashion, you'll fall in love. That's why children are naturally takers. If they're not taught to give, they will hate you. Hate you! You have a nice child, you give whatever he wants. Oh, Thanksgiving. Let's go to Walmart and kill a few people. Let's go. Let's buy you that gift. And you buy and buy and buy and buy and buy. Give kids whatever they want. Whatever the kid wants, you give them. What does that kid do? That kid hates you and ends up in therapy. Why could that be? You gave the kid whatever he wanted. Because if the kid didn't give, they hate the world. Okay? Simple, basic formula. If you want the full version, you can go to my Facebook page and read... Hear my lecture on love and marriage. So too when it comes to God. How do we love God? We give. And those are the mitzvot we get involved with. Okay? In order to study the oral Torah, you've got to give yourself up for it. Turn over the page. Let's tie this whole thing together. And hopefully we'll get it very, very clear. And then we'll recap because there's a lot over here. So once again, the Jewish people were saved at that day. They were saved in a hidden fashion. Right? They realize there's a whole operation of God happening behind the scenes. Not just revealed miracles. Love comes from the hidden miracles, the hidden love. That's where it comes from. At the end of the Megillah, hold on 1 second. At the end of the Megillah, it says, they were to observe these days as feasting and gladness for sending portions to one and another and gifts to the poor. This is one of the 4 mitzvot we perform on Purim. What do? We give gifts of food to friends, mitzvah number 1. And we give gifts of money and charity to poor people. In Judaism, you do not have to give charity to whoever asks you. You can give money to whoever you want. Halachot of tzedakah, laws of charity. That you have to give charity is a given. Who you give to is totally up to you. Totally up to you. There's certain parameters that we're told to give, maybe family members, people in our cities, poor people. But generally speaking, it's up to you within those groups. But on Purim, you just give to whoever asks. How much? It could be $1, it could be $10,000. I've seen people give away a lot of money on Purim. It's all about the giving. What does the giving do? It generates love. It generates love. We're all about generating love. And the giving creates the love. We recreate the love the Jewish people finally felt as a nation. Maybe as individuals, but as a nation, we just kind of got it. You see, there's times in history when entire nations, either negatively or positively, just get it. And at Purim, we as an entire nation just got it. We also just got it at Mount Sinai. But that was a different getting. What we got over there was, whoa, we got to do this. At Purim, it's like, whoa, I get it. It's like 3 years into marriage, or 5 years into marriage, or some say 7 years into marriage. Now I get it. Up to now, I didn't get it. I was just going through the motions. And they meant something to me. But now I finally get it. There's such a thing. There's such a thing. Are we following so far? I want to tie this all together. I want to leave no questions. I want to make sure the bubble is secure. You have a question? You want to hold on to it? Okay. Hold on to it. So what are the four mitzvot of the day? Mitzvah number one, we give portions of food, ideally to cooked foods or ready-to-eat foods, to friends and loved ones, two portions to two people. We also have to give money and a lot of charity to poor people, or actually whoever asks. We read the Megillah twice, once at nighttime and once in the morning. And you have to hear it both times. And we have a big meal with a lot of food and a lot of drink. Actually, there is a mitzvah on Purim, which yeshiva boys and girls are obsessed with. We do get a little drunk on Purim. Why? Why? So remember, the Jewish holiday and the laws always reflect what happened. What did they try to do? Not 6 months. What did they try to do on Purim? They tried to kill us. How do we celebrate? We celebrate physically. We eat. We drink. See, the halachas always reflect what happened. On Hanukkah, did they try to kill us? No. They tried to take away our Torah and secularize us. They wanted to enlighten us. How do we celebrate? We light candles. See, the mitzvah always comes along and reflects the spiritual reality of what they try to do to us. On Purim, we eat and we drink. What happens, ladies, although I'm sure none of you have any experience in this, when you drink a little bit too much? Before you end up vomiting up that curry you ate a few moments before, what happens? What happens? You do silly things. And what do you like? You're happy. For most people. Yeah, you're happy. And there's a certain point of inebriation where you love everyone. I love you. You're my best friend. This is based upon a Talmudic statement that says, Nichnas hayayin, the wine goes in, Yotza sod, all the secrets come out. If you want to know what your friends think about you, get them drunk. You know, I always hated you. I loved you always. So what happens is, when we take in the wine, the secrets come out. And that's Purim, isn't it? You see, God's hidden. He's hidden under... Why do we wear costumes on Purim? Same thing. God has a mask. And he puts the mask on. And sometimes the mask is ripped off as an open miracle. But there's something better than that. And that is the hidden time. The time when we pierce through the curtain and we are able to take the mask off ourselves. And the wine helps us do that to some degree. Imagine you go to a costume party. And you see someone in a gorilla outfit. There's gorilla outfits. Like the big hairy outfit with the big furry head. And they walk over to you and they start to push you. And like, roo, 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 roo. And you're like, who is that? Who is that? Is that Rabbi Lawrence? Roo, 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 roo. And they keep pushing you. Roo, 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 roo. And you're like, Rabbi Eber. Roo, 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 roo. Right? Push you again. You're like, Rabbi Elimelech. No, too short. No, it can't be. You're like, one second. Who is that? Who's that? You're like, oh, 1 second. It's Gabby. Now, once, and it is her. What does Gabby do once you identify her under the mask? What does she do? She takes the mask off. Once you know it's her, and she knows you know, and you know that she knows, she's not going to be like, rrr, rrr, again. You're like, okay, we got it. She takes the mask off. So too, there is a mask that hides God in this world. The word for world in Hebrew is olam. The word for hidden is he'olam, same root, because God is hidden in the world. Our job is to take God's mask off and see God's operating underneath. By the way, when we do that, is when miracles occur. It's another discussion, but when you're able to do that, then the laws of nature, the mask of this world, are removed, and you perform miracles. Which is why there are no more open miracles, because no one is of that level anymore. That's really why there's no more open miracles. Because no one is at that level where they're able to really, and I mean really, really see God absolutely under that mask. Because after the Hanukkah story, Jewish history was rich, rich with open miracles. These are the hidden ones. So those are the four mitzvot we have on Purim. By the way, as Rabbi Ehud pointed out to me before I gave the class, we have one reading at nighttime, which is unusual. Most mitzvot we do are during the day. Okay? Most mitzvot are daytime mitzvot. Here we have a mitzvah to read the Megillah at nighttime, and then again during the day. What's the idea? So nighttime represents darkness. You can't see. Things are mixed up. You go from darkness, from the difficulty that is not seeing God clearly, to the light of day. Okay, that's why nighttime is put into this particular mitzvah. Okay? The idea of Purim, therefore, 5 more minutes. The idea of Purim, therefore, is to recreate the Mount Sinai experience with food and enjoyment and love. Which Jewish holiday? Hear this idea. If you hear this idea, it was worth my mother having me. Which Jewish holiday is the fear holiday? What's the fear holiday? Yom Kippur. You're scared. You're standing there begging for your life. Watch this. Yom Kippur means Yom, day. Ke means like. Pur means Purim. It's a day like Purim. But not as good. I'm telling you the truth. What's the great holiday? Purim. Yom Kippur is only Yom Kippur. That's the Arizal. Great Kabbalist. So they like Purim, but not as good as Purim itself. This is accepted right through the Jewish world. I'm being very serious. Because you can do the whole year of Yom Kippur thing, and you're banging away, and you're like terrified. But that's no way to hold a relationship. The greater way is to eat and drink and laugh and dress up and experience God through joy. That's Purim. Yom Kippur is a weak second compared to the level of spiritual happiness you can feel on Purim. And we Jews are unique in this. That we take the physical and we say, that becomes the vessel to make us spiritual beings. Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur. We want the real thing, Purim. Yes, my dear. So you're not, so the saving of Mount Sinai, the saving we had at the time of Purim made us so full of joy of love that it just clicked. We got it. We just got it. Through the miracles that happened in a hidden way that we reached a level of Ahava. And that represents the Oral Torah. Okay, at that point where we're able to delve in through the joy, we were able to really delve in and take upon ourselves the whole hidden side, because the Oral Torah is hidden. You can't see it or can't read it. It's all hidden. And we took that upon ourselves, which is a much higher level. Was there a question over here as well? Someone had a question? Yes.
Just wondering if you could repeat the word that had the same root of world.
Yes. Olam. Olam is world. And He'olam is hidden. The roots are ayin, lamed, mem. Ayin, lamed, mem. Because God's hidden. You can't see God. You can't feel God. You can't touch God. God is hidden in the world. Our job is to bring God out. And Purim represents that revelation. Are we all clear? Did we leave anything else out? I want to make sure. So we create bottom of your second page. And we'll finish off. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ahar. It says that the Jewish people encamped opposite the mountain. This is the mountain of Mount Sinai. The word vayichan is in the singular. Okay? It shouldn't say that. It should say that it's like the Jew, right, camped, right, at the mountain. It's a strange way. The commentators say it says encamped in the singular, like one Jew, because the Jewish people reached a unity at Mount Sinai that they didn't recreate again till Purim. What was that unity? Ish echad b'lev echad. One person with one heart. If you want to know the greatest miracle of Jewish history, it's that on that occasion, Mount Sinai, and then at Purim, every Jew actually got on. There was no arguments. I know it's hard to believe. As far as I'm concerned, that's the greatest miracle. There have been two points in Jewish history where there was absolute, complete unity. No one argued. There was no fighting. We were in it together. Mount Sinai and Purim. And those who come together. One represents the written Torah, and one represents the oral Torah. One represents Yom Kippur, which, by the way, the second commandments, Ten Commandments were given twice. First were broken. Second commandments were given on Yom Kippur. Okay? So that represents the fear. Important. You've got to have fear as part of the relationship. In my marriage, I need a little bit of fear as well. Make sure I don't say the wrong thing. I'm nervous. A little bit of eggshell walking. It's not a bad thing. People think marriage, say whatever you want. You get into an argument? Yeah, just tell them. No, there's a little bit of fear. But there's something much more important than fear, and that is love. So to our relationship with God, and Purim represents the love aspect of our relationship, which is why out of all the miracles that have happened to the Jewish people, we have made, or Esther and Mordechai, and this is a big thing, created an actual holiday out of this time. So what do we get out of it? True, unadulterated joy and simcha. We eat, we drink, we invite people to our tables, we get dressed up, we act silly. Why do we act silly? Why do we act silly? Because that was the story. This is this one idea. I'll share this idea and then I'll finish with this. The key word of the entire Megillah is v'nehafachu. The whole thing turned around. The Jewish people, this is going to happen again, by the way. So listen carefully. The entire Jewish people were about to be destroyed. It's not a funny story. If you read the story, it's actually gripping. Absolutely gripping. It looks like the entire Jewish people are about to be wiped out totally. Totally. Not one Jew left. And then in seconds, the whole thing turns around. It all twists around. The insides spill out. And we know that Esther is actually Jewish. And she's actually a queen. And we're safe.